This is Barry Tyker of the Oral History Project. Today is Wednesday, June 12th, 1996. I'm at the Cole Scott Myers studio in, is this Hollandale?
It is. Rural.
In rural Hollandale,
yes.
Wisconsin. And we're interviewing Francis Myers. This is the second part of an interview that we started early last week. Warrington, how about beginning the questioning with you?
Well, where to start? It seems to me we left off with Francis talking to her Wonder Woman prince, several prints, and it occurs to me that her art material began to come out of her interest in women's politics, women's issues, the women's movement. Am I right? Is this an assumption on my part that's true or not?
Yes, in the 70s, as you may remember, the women's movement gathered force and became a great force in politics and in every sphere of our lives. Those of us that were paying any attention at all, reading the papers, reading anything in the media. One of the symbols of the women's movement was the figure of Wonder Woman, a very positive symbol of a female who can, a woman who can do pretty much everything and has superpowers. So it was a very good role model in some ways for the women's movement. Some years later, as I explained in the earlier tape, I had received on a birthday cake a little figurine of Wonder Woman, whom when the candles burned, she became slightly mutilated, but there was a great pathos about this tiny little 4-inch figure. And when I was teaching a color Xerox course one summer, I put this figure on the glass, and the figurine seemed to be transfigured. And the pathos was very moving. And I looked at this for a while, these color Xeroxes, and I was tired of what I was doing as an artist at that time. And this cooked in my brain for a while. And when I had to do an image for a portfolio called Point of Departure of former alums from the UW Art Department, this figure came forward. And so the figure is Wonder Woman tied by her golden lasso, which sort of is a stand-in for the Christian image of Christ in the temple. And there had been at the Elvia Museum in Madison a German expressionist show just previous to this. And I had looked at the work of Schmidt Rottluff, a German artist, in this exhibit. And I think it was the first time that I appropriated an image from another artist, and I took the head, the woodcut head of Schmidt Rottluff, and affixed it to Wonder Woman, so that you don't see in this print the typical Wonder Woman features that you're used to from looking at comic books. So I'm making allusions to previous art and to other artists who have used the human face to evoke emotions. And I felt this was a very successful image, and I continued to work with the image of Wonder Woman. And since I'd started out with Christ in the temple, I thought of paralleling various events in the life of Christ, which were familiar to people often. I think it pretty much through art that other artists from the Middle Ages to the Renaissance to contemporary time, let's say to the Mexican muralists, had used these events in the life of Christ for their artistic subject matter. So I transposed Wonder Woman and put her in the place of Christ. And the next image I did was called the Pietà, where instead of Christ coming down from the cross and being awaited by his mother and Mary Magdalene, Wonder Woman, is descending and finds the bony knees of the starving Buddha, which is a figure from art history. So I continued to work with these images. So they're packed with lots of things that are close to me. The idea of Wonder Woman, who was a hero of mine growing up, my Christian Catholic culture, and then my feminist ideas, and my adult attitudes toward religion and toward viewing these events, which one believed entire as a child, and moving them into the area of some kind of closer to mythology, and also reflecting on the history of art and the kinds of images that Western artists had used for a long time, and the power of these images, the familiarity, the connections with these events that people sort of automatically get into and are knowledgeable about, and then it is an interesting move at that time to exchange characters, to have the same surroundings, the same events, but with different characters, so that they are rather unconsciously. I didn't sit down and have a program. It was just, this was a fascinating image to me, and I think that's the way I make art. I don't have a program laid out. I don't have an image in my mind of what I want to accomplish. Things evolve from one print to the other, and I might stop to say that these are small and quite large linoleum prints, which I hadn't worked in for a long time. I had been working exclusively in etching since I'd been in graduate school. And this was an interesting departure for me, a whole different kind of art making, and very much related to drawing. The carving that I do on these linoleum blocks is much like drawing, only there's a kind of fierce resistance from the linoleum, so that it's kind of a matter of summing up a lot of energy to attack. It was like attacking the medium while you were drawing at the same time. So there was this kind of interesting play between energy and thought and nuance of line. So it was a very challenging way of working and very satisfying.
It's interesting that you made this departure, technically, from your earlier prints, which had been sort of sensitive, impressionistic, oriented landscape and theme, and your ideas became political. You're doing a kind of attack prints, and you made this radical switch in technique. You know, now, was it linked in your mind, say, to the prints of the Expressionists, the Germans? You know, there is this history of attack printing, where the relief print is this wonderful vehicle to carry. You know, it's upfront, it's readable, it's immediate. Were thoughts like that in your mind?
Well, they were there, certainly, because of my familiarity with all kinds of prints. And with the Mexican artists, Posada comes to mind, who had used prints for political purposes. Yes, I think there is a very upfront, direct quality about the relief print that the other print media don't share. They are a sort of much more transformative. They're the process makes one plot and wait more than relief printing. Relief printing is really just right out in front, and if you make an error or if your tool slips, it's there. There's no way to erase this. So there is this kind of battle between you and the medium. There's a battle for control. Like, who's going to win this battle? And well, if you do, sort of, in your judgment, do something you'd wish you hadn't, Then there's always cutting that section out of the print. That's a solution that I like to deal with, is just reconforming the surface. Now this is possible with prints. It's not so possible with something like oil painting or watercolor. I suppose with oil painting you could, well, your problems are different. With oil painting you can paint over something. With prints you have a matrix and it's there, and you print it, and you print whatever's on that surface. So you have to find different solutions to something that didn't turn out exactly as you would like it to have. So yes, there are all kinds of battles going on in this, between men and women, between religion, true believer religion, and skepticism, and with the medium itself. It's a powerful medium. It's full of contrasts, and so it's very appropriate for something that has a political message. It's not a soft medium. It's not. It can be beautiful, but rather sharply beautiful. Well,
did the subject and the attack have anything to do with your work at the university? Isn't this about the time that you were kind of struggling initially to gain a foothold in the department?
I think this was prior to that.
It was prior.
Yes. So that really is not an issue. I was working as an independent artist. With all the pleasures of that, and so that wasn't a factor. But once begun on this enterprise, I, you know, what were the main events in the life of Christ that I would deal with? And after the Christ in the temple and the Pietà, then I looked to the resurrection and. These subjects have been treated by artists for centuries, so there certainly is a precedent, and I was fully aware of the precedents. So I was working in a tradition and then denying that tradition, transposing it, transforming it. The print, the assumption, of course, I'm still dealing with Wonder Woman, and I was reading a novel by Cynthia Ozick, where she was describing two women sitting in lawn chairs as if they were Greek urns through which the roots were growing into the ground from a plant. So this image appears in this print. The first buried stage of Wonder Woman is a horizontal linear image, and roots are growing from her figure through an urn and up into the resurrected Wonder Woman. And there is an Art Deco cemetery off to her left. And then I continued and did the Ascension, where there's all sorts of symbols that we are familiar with from the paintings we have seen. And I continued through several more prints having to do with the life of Christ, and then it kind of segued into more general images. At this time, I encountered or tried doing monoprints for the first time. So I took Wonder Woman into these images and combined the qualities of print and painting in quite a long series of works. Working on plexiglass, I was able to put a drawing underneath the transparent plexiglass, and each time I worked with a single color, or perhaps two colors, printed that, and then came back and worked on the plexi anew and added more colors. Having the guidelines for the image, which was necessary in working this way, allowed me to change my art attack. And I could be much more painterly. I could play around with how I made the marks. And so these images while dealing with the same subject matter and while being apparently made by the same artist, have a different look. They're much more, again, painterly and layering of paint. The brushwork is very obvious. While the previous prints had been quite flat, due to the rolling of the surface and them being a relief print, these were very brushy, and there's a certain kind of freedom about the marks and about the look of the works. What also happened when I was working with monotypes was that I began for the first time to increase the traditional size of the print as I knew it and to work in sections. I have a large monotype in front of me that has six sections. Each section is 22 by 30, so that the whole is about 64 inches square. And at that time I had not a very large press and could not have anywhere approached an image this large. So it occurred to me at this time that to work in sections solved the problem for me of scale. I really was interested in working in a large, rather monumental scale, and I was dealing with Wonder Woman, and with each new print she became more monumental. And in this particular monotype, she has grown to be very much like an icon, a symbol of strength, and very powerful looking. Her body is rather muscular. She's still garbed in rather traditional Wonder Woman costume, but there are she is also very has a something of fragility about her in that she is much like a Greek statue where there are limbs missing and parts have cracked away. So I wanted to show both aspects of Wonder Woman, or the image of woman at this time, of a strength and fragility at the same time.
The monotype was that kind of an end? You did some and then you retreated back from it to the woodcut. I'm thinking of the woodcuts of like the Niagara Falls and ones that have really nothing to do with Wonder Woman, but were purely relief prints. Is that off on a kind of a dead end, or?
That's a bit later.
That's later.
I spent a number of years working on the Wonder Woman image and did quite a few monotypes, and sometimes they were, Wonder Woman disappeared a bit, she became the sort of the generalized image of woman took over, and then bits of Wonder Woman would appear, and but very much feminist work, and very much about power and lack of power, opposition of powers in contemporary society. As I say, I worked a number of years on the Wonder Woman images, perhaps 4 years, and at a certain point I felt that I had said what I needed to say. So I, after an exhibition in Chicago, which was really a large exhibition with probably some 40 works, I felt that it wasn't productive anymore for me as an artist to continue with this. I really had pretty much said what I needed to. So at that time, I was building an addition, or having built an addition for me, onto my studio. I had gotten a National Endowment for the Arts grant, artist fellowship. And so one of the traditional things one does with these funds is to use it on a studio if you're an artist. So I was fairly cramped for space, so I put an addition onto this old shed. And the things that were very apparent to me were tools and things around in my studio, a stove that still hadn't been assembled. And so I began to look anew at these objects, as what their function was, at what they looked like, at what their form was, and to ex- not really decided to explore this. It just sort of became what was uppermost in my mind and led me along so that I started a new group of works. And at the same time, I started to work with wood and with woods plural, with lots of different woods that had a surface that showed up in the printing. So I'm still working in relief. I'm now beginning to work in power tools, which were wonderfully productive for working on wood because I could use hardwoods. Oak was one of my favorite woods, having a very important texture, important, very assertive texture. And I had been working, first of all, in aquatints with very little surface value, just very subtle tonality. And then segued to the linoleums prints, which had a very flat surface. And then got into the monotype where there was more brushy surface. So I was moving into to work gradually that had a lot of activity on the surface. So wood was a natural choice for me at this time.
Wood, I'd like to ask one question. Your work and Warrington's work both have the same effect on me. They force me to look at things in ways and think about things in ways I've never quite looked at them and thought about them before. And I feel myself sort of being transformed a little bit as I look at your Wonder Woman images, the same way I feel when I look at some of Warrington's work. Does your work reflect your philosophy, or does it help create your philosophy? I don't know if you know what I mean. But.
Ask that question again with the thing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I think I'm somewhere in between there. That my thoughts become resolved as I make the work. I start with just a little fraction of an idea, like, okay, Wonder Woman, Christ in the temple. Well, there's something about that posture that both of these characters that I remember that connects them, this being tied up and there being a lot of emotion engendered by this, by a human being who is immobilized and confined. So then I begin to think about these things, mm-hmm. and then it moves to the next idea that begins to then gel, and I sort of look back into art I've experienced and to events in my life and in history and very often in contemporary history, politics, that join in this. I very much bring things together that are pretty disparate, and I think that's my job as an artist, not to recreate things that you're familiar with, but to use familiar things and combine them with things that normally wouldn't be put together. And I think that's how I function as an artist. I set up a problem without saying that I'm going to give myself a problem, but I give myself problems without trying. That I have an idea, all right, and then I have another idea, which is yards away, and how do I bring these together, and how do I make them visual in a way that's unexpected and pleasing to me? Above all, of course, I have to please myself as an artist and to feel that I've accomplished something new. I have a big need to always do something new. It may not appear that way to the person who's looking at my work, but if I do one thing, I have to do something different the next time, even though there'll be a continuity in a group of work. But I need to reinvent something. I very rarely would do something like take the Pieta image that I worked with and do it three different ways. I don't feel comfortable doing that. I have to move on to the next one. So there's a kind of morality behind my work of being better, accomplishing more. This is a kind of family trait that I inherited, this kind of idea I was exposed to, that you always need to be better. And I think that kind of morality makes itself visible to me from time to time as I work. Sometimes it's not there, but other times it is. And then there's sometimes literally little moral tales. In fact, this next group of relief prints in wood that I'm going to talk about. There are little moral tales that go on in these images.
We've talked to a lot of artists who work with a certain type of thing, of material or subject matter. I'm thinking of Jack Damer and his engines and machines, you know. And it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that one piece of work seems to lead to the next, and then eventually there comes a point where there's just sort of a cutoff and it's time to move on to something else. Is that somewhat how, like, at least this Wonder Woman series worked for you?
Exactly. I think I've accomplished what I needed to. And I need to, as an artist, be stimulated. I need new ideas. And I'm very visually aware of things around me and things I see. And if something strikes me as being wonderful, oh, visually incredible, like these things laying around in my studio that was being built, I needed to pay attention to that. And actually, I was looking for what might be the next thing. Now, I haven't planned that my recent life as an artist would take many directions, but it has. And it now seems legitimate to me since I see other artists doing it, well-known artists, postmodern artists, rather than modernism, where one took a stance and one stuck with that stance, and an artist really had a look and pursued the same kind of image for years and years. At least that seems to me how it happened, that modernism was very intent on the pushing the artist to take a stance, and one stance, pretty much one stance. And so it's easier for me to make moves now because it's not considered unusual. And yeah, one thinks after a while that this is how I spend most of the hours of my life in my studio making art, that I'd better do something that interests me and forget about the fact that I'm making moves from one group of works to another.
Now, you may hear a little scrabbling sound in the background, people listening to this tape. I'm told that those are raccoons underneath the studio. Is that?
Well, they're up above the studio, down below it. And as a matter of fact, there's a great big one in a cage now, down in the basement.
Is this the Hollandale Convention of raccoons? Or?
Yes, raccoon acres here.
Okay, I'm going to shut off this tape, this side of the tape, and we'll start on side two. Okay, Eric, go ahead.
You all set?
Yeah.
You had spoken earlier about what in essence is reinventing yourself periodically. Jack Damer has referred to that too, and talks about totally changing the subject matter and the attack, to use Warrington's words. Is this sort of the subconscious approach that you use, and do you feel you're each new period you go through, you're kind of competing with yourself from your previous life?
Probably. I don't know if I have expressed it that way to myself, but usually when I'm starting out with new work, I look at the previous group of works and feel they're inferior. I have to do better. And after a few years, I come back to the old work and I find out what really was good about that and what wasn't so good. But I can appreciate my work from other times later. I think when you're moving on to something new, the work you've done previously doesn't seem relevant. It almost doesn't seem you, because you are into something that you feel is different. I think artists see each work they do as a lot different, because they know that the challenges they've met in that work and that they have accomplished have met the challenge. So it seems very new and different, and the work that's been done before, those were old challenges, they've been taken care of, so they become irrelevant for the time being, and later on one can go back and see the connections. It's very hard in the beginning to see connections with work that's 3 months old, 6 months old, when you have begun to work with what you consider new ideas. So here I am, I'm looking at a large woodcut, 32 by 44. I would go to the lumber yard and have wood cut into 4x8 sheets cut in three sections with just a few inches off the bottom to make a rectangle that I enjoyed working with. And there are pieces of stovepipe, rather beautiful formally, which is what caught my attention. There was an oil space heater that was being installed in this new studio, and the pieces of the pipe were sitting around waiting to be installed, and they were really quite beautiful. I was also looking at the tools that I was using, the power tools that I was using to cut the wood, and there's a little chuck which loosens the points on this flexible shaft tool that I was using. And I was beginning to look very much around me at things around me. No allegories yet in this group. That comes later as this series continues. But I was thinking a little bit about still life. Okay, what do artists make art out of? And still life is a traditional art form. I mean, the Dutch still lives of game, of dead animals, dead birds, and bouquets of flowers are very interesting to me, especially at this period, not at the period of the work I'm looking at, but I'm thinking from my contemporary point of view about still life, and throwing out the idea of things that have to be arranged very carefully and have to have connections, like a vase of flowers, and doing kind of odd things, stovepipe, chuck, and there's a pair of binoculars in here. There's the foot of a stool. And these things are not true to size, one in relation to the other. The chuck, which is really about 2 inches in size, is as big as the binoculars. The binoculars are as big as the stool. The stove pipes are outsized. But the spaces between are serve to give each of these objects their own space. And I've used kind of geometric devices to enclose them, a triangle here, a circle there. And also the texture of the wood, which I'm cutting with power tools, which allows me to work again in a very painterly way on a piece of wood. The kind of muscular attack that you use on wood if you're using traditional tools is much different. It really is something that's much tighter, much more controlling. The power tools just go through that wood and just sort of dissolve it so that one can make, one has to react very quickly. And one sees what the edge of the tool is doing to the wood and gets an immediate idea, yes, this works, yes, I'll do more of this. A piece of wood flies off, cracks off, and leaves just a little bit of surface. And oh, that looks exciting. One goes in one direction and another direction, and there's a little bit of cross-hatching. And it's like learning how to draw with this tool as you go. And it's very exciting. This was a very spontaneous period for me. Some of the work that I do and have done, I spend a certain amount of time thinking very seriously about the relationships of what I'm dealing with. This work was very spontaneous. It was a period when I was very sure of what I was doing. Even though it was all new, I didn't have hesitations. How I approached the work was to cover these plywood boards with India ink, so they were black, and then I began to draw on them with chalk, with white chalk. And that was easily erasable so that I could draw and draw till my drawing pleased me. And then I'd take out the power tools and just attack the surface. After that, I transferred the first proof of that first block onto a second, and later perhaps to a third to get more color and overlay textures. And then I would begin to draw on that and decide where to remove areas and what to leave and what I knew would overlap and how colors would mix, and sort of just just react to my first cuts on my second block, and sometimes there was a third block. So it was a very, with periods of drawing and periods of transferring, the totality was very spontaneous. And if you looked at this image, it's very vibrant. There's just an awful lot of motion in this. And some of the pieces, almost the objects that I'm drawing, almost seem to move off of the paper. And the marks of the cutting are very, very vibrant and just have a lot of energy and zigzagging and edges. The edges are very irregular. So it was a very satisfying way to work, a very interesting period for me. As I said earlier, these works began to, well, I'll get into that later, because here's a second print that was happening at the time that the building was going on, and also it was fencing time. We live on a farm with lots of pastures and fields of corn and hay, and every spring the fences have deteriorated, so we go out and repair them. So in this print I have my big leather gloves, a lot of barbed wire, sunglasses, and these are all combined with, this is the outside work that was going on, and in the inside the bathroom was being rehabbed, and there were some awful aqua-colored plastic tiles in the old bathroom, and I took a chisel and a crowbar, and I just took those horrible tiles off in preparation for the new bathroom, and those appear in there. A lost key appears in there. A push pin appears. It was, you know, I was looking around me when a section of the work, again, this relief print on wood, needed something formal. I looked around. Sometimes I would sort of pace. I'd put my hands behind my back and pace through the studio, through the house, look outside, until I found something that was just right, that had some association with my life, and yet had a wonderful form. These sunglasses are really beautiful. They're sort of the Elvis Presley type. And they have lenses that dim, so they go from blue on top to a gray on the bottom. And these are huge. I think that I would say these are about 15, 16 inches across. And again, I'm still using the scale where things are not too relative scale. They are to whatever scale pleased me. So the glasses are huge, the gloves are huge. Everything is really kind of oversized except the bathroom tiles. They're kind of true to life. And this print has wild colors. It has lavenders, rose colors, cadmium yellows, several shades of green, brilliant red, and with the overlays of one color over another, and aquamarine, some parts are subdued by the overlays of many colors, and some are just brilliant. So it's kind of a wild print with some geometry which controls the whole. The barbed wire runs through the piece and kind of sections off various things. And the tile images kind of calm things down, hold things in place, and introduce some geometry to these loose forms. Well, while I'm working in the studio, I listen to the radio, and I listen to news, and the next print that I'm looking at, I heard of a tragedy on the New England Thruway, where in the middle of the night, the bridge, which hadn't been inspected quite recently, just fell apart and was going over a river. And a truck and some cars were whizzing along late at night and went right into the river. So this is the scene I'm showing, and I'm thinking about how that might have happened and what forces might have been at work. I had recently looked at prints by the Japanese artist Hokusai, and he had especially one image. It was kind of like a genie coming out of a beer barrel. It was like, you know, the spirit of the barrel and the spirit of what was in it. So I thought that was quite a wonderful visual device, so I used it in this print. And the genie is coming out of the water. She's wearing a mask, which is an old license plate from one of the cars. And maybe this is the explanation. The other explanation I visually offer is a corkscrew, a giant corkscrew going through the concrete on the bridge, and it's falling apart in pieces. So I'm taking a disaster that maybe there isn't one cause for, maybe there's no explanation, maybe there is, and there's no explanation of who gets involved in that, who happened because of certain events happened to be driving along that throughway at this particular time. So I'm dealing with those ideas. I have a lot of prints that in this series that deal with smoking, which is one of those things with me that every now and then I smoke for a while and then I realize this is not what I should be doing, but it's so attractive. So I have these images having to do with this very seductive yet dangerous habit. So here the cigarette, this very large cigarette, again on my woodcut prints, is giving off like a message. And there's a little sailboat that's out in the water and it's getting tossed back and forth. There's a lot of danger there. Is that little sailboat going to get out of danger? Is it too late? But the message is there. So I'm putting out my thoughts about this interesting habit. Meanwhile, in the bottom of the print, things are not as they should be. Is this the effect of perhaps doing things one knows one oughtn't? So there's a garden. Grapes are growing out of the garden, but there are no leaves. There's a hatchet that's growing. There is a high-heeled shoe, which is growing out of the ground and sprouting leaves. Incidentally, a shoe I had just bought for a wedding, which I admired very much, this pair of shoes, and thought it would make a very beautiful form. So I deal with things that look right as well as things that are going to talk about my idea. And in this series, there's also the lighter side. I bought a shirt to go on vacation with, driving to Maine, and it was a Hawaiian shirt. This print is called My Hawaiian Shirt. So in the print, I have one of the Hawaiian maidens wearing this shirt, and the shirt has the Hawaiian maidens on it. And so I'm having sort of image within image, reflecting this beautiful shirt that I enjoyed so much and had all these wonderful scenes of beautiful maidens. And they're in luscious colors, luscious tropical colors. And then I also have a symbol of a hand and some glasses, drinking glasses, from stopping at lots of fast food places to get a beverage. And the trash cans were always placed as you go out or come in. And so this symbol stayed with me traveling to and from Maine on this summer vacation. And that was a constant symbol. Also, I constantly wore this shirt. So this is just a kind of memento to my summer trip. Another print in this series, which I call Exotic Dangers. I was driving, this has a lot of aspects to it. I was driving to my uncle's funeral outside of Indianapolis and driving from the airport, feeling very depressed. And it was a very depressing area along this highway and some old industrial buildings that were not in very good condition. And off to my right, just did a short take, I saw on a building these very large words, Exotic Dangers. And I looked back, I couldn't believe that someone would write that intriguing phrase on their building. And when I looked back, unfortunately it said Exotic Dancers. And so I incorporated that into my print, which again is having to do with smoking. There is a huge sort of day glow, yellow-green hand with a, which the two fingers holding the cigarette actually turning into a rabbit's head as a reflection. So I'm dealing here with things that are one thing and they're another, and the dancers are scattered in small vignettes around the print. And there's an enormous rose in the center with a blade cutting through it. So I am talking about dangers, exotic dangers. Well, there are quite a few prints in this series.
Do you have a name for this series?
No, I didn't conceive of it. I didn't know how long it was going to go on, and I don't have a name for it. But we might look at some etchings at this point.
These are all wood.
Offer something, because you know I could just go on forever.
Okay,
well,
yeah.
And never get to the end of where I'd like to be.
Well, now you're turning to prints that seem very close in feeling to the woodcuts. They're the same size. They have the same type of color and the quality of collage. But the essential medium now is really a shift to intaglio, right?
Right. These are prints on steel. And at this time, I was teaching at the university, and we had a visitor from England for a summer who was teaching intaglio and working on steel, which is something that hadn't been done before. People either worked on zinc or copper, and steel has a particular quality, so I felt I should do some prints with this medium so I could be helpful. And at the same time, I think my experience with the wood and with the carving quality of the power tools, I felt my work took a little more sculptural look to it, in that rather than dealing with an image on a whole rectangle and a white border around it or no border at all, I put my images together in pieces. And I brought some of the wood with me. I have in this print a big eight, the number eight, carved out from a piece of wood. And there's a big reddish cross, which is actually two pieces of grooved plastic, preformed plastic. And I have some little bits of wood scattered through. So I'm combining my experience with relief and then adding back the intaglio component. And the edges are very prominent of each of these pieces. Steel itself has a surface quality. It's never white. As much as you polish, it will never be white. Its molecular structure goes all the way through, and you can never make it white. So it's always going to hold a little ink as you ink it and wipe it before printing. So that points out its shape. It makes its shape much stronger. So that I talked about when I began working in wood that I paid much more attention to the forms of things. So here I'm continuing that interest and dealing with edges and shapes and form. I'm also continuing the ideas that were in the wood group, at least for now. And some of them had kind of magical images in, strange things happening. And so I'm dealing here with a top hat, an image of a top hat, an eight, which is a lucky number, and a cross, a rabbit, which magicians draw out of a top hat. So I'm putting these things together. They're not all on one piece of metal or if I were a painter, on one piece of canvas. They're all separate, they're overlaid, they have the possibility of having different arrangements and relationships with each other. But this was a big interest of mine at this point. And it continues through a group of prints, the ideas of something being other than what it looks like, the idea of magic. So in the next print, dealing with, there is a hatchet, a really beautiful hatchet. The shape of this hatchet is extraordinarily elegant. The curve of the blade, the subtlety of the blunt end, and the shape of the handle and the wood texture of the handle, all I found very intriguing. And thinking about the hardness and the purpose of this tool, and then contrasting it with a beautiful sort of bud vase that my mother gave to me, which she had had for many years. So these are overlaid, and so I'm reflecting on the delicacy of one thing, the kind of inherent brutality of another thing, and they're overlaid and they're living together very nicely here, but I'm thinking about their properties. And again, I'm mixing wood. The handle of this image is a relief, and the glass vase is an etching, and there are bits of wood. And in the upper portion, thinking about contrasts again, about the stovepipes that I dealt with earlier, and smoke is coming out of them. So I'm thinking about the hardness of one material, the ephemeral quality of smoke. The smoke begins as an etching, it ends up as a relief. So I'm making a comment on how I'm working, that etching looks one way, relief looks another, and I'm making apparent to who's ever looking at this that these are the ways I'm working. So this print is not only about what these objects mean, what I'm expressing about the objects, but how it's made. And they're very sculptural. The edges are very apparent of each of these objects. I'm not filling up my rectangle. Things are very much tilted and overlapped, and not overly active. It's quite an elegant print. And in another print of this group, working with the same materials, steel etching and relief, I'm again thinking about still life and about working with the things around me, but not thinking in traditional arrangements. So there is a very elegant leather purse that I own. There is fruit, bananas, and pears, and apples, and a beautiful Art Deco pitcher. So I'm mixing these all up. The scale is large, 32 by 44. And the objects are very outsized. It's a huge pear. And they're very dynamically arranged. And again, I'm pointing out the materials I'm working with, etching and wood. Liquid is pouring from the pitcher and starts out very etcherly looking, and it ends up with the wood, the grain of wood, and the liquid itself being outlined and very sculptural on its edge. About this time or a little later, I had an opportunity to work at Tandem Press and have a group of students, all my students that I was teaching intaglio to, be my printers. And it was an opportunity for me to work more ambitiously in scale and more complicated, because I could have a lot of help to do prints that I couldn't do by myself, because there were a lot of runs through the press and also a scale. The press at Tandem, being 6 foot by 12 foot, always looked to me like you could drive a Volkswagen through it. It was so big compared to any press I had seen before. So I had 2 weeks there, and I produced quite a few prints. I did the etching in my own studio, because it was very elaborate, soft ground etching. And working on steel and overlaying plates, in one of the prints that is approximately 70 inches wide, maybe 45 inches high, I was doing a memorial to a friend of mine who had died a very untimely death. So I'm dealing with images that are kind of traditional having to do with it. There's an urn in it. There are birds, sort of elegant birds, but threatening-looking birds, and a dragon. And these are treated in a very intricate, detailed, textural, and yet sculptural way. so that they there are many shapes that overlap and rather jagged edges appropriate to what I was feeling and what I wanted to put into this print. And then there were relief. There's an enormous floral image that is printed opaquely over another image, and a very threatening sort of plant hand shape. The floral forms in this image are very threatening. And so it was a very interesting experience to be able to work in a shop with lots of help. I did several prints that had to do with a dog, a kind of leaping dog, and the interaction in one between a dog and a swan, and still very sculptural. In one rather colorful and humorous, another dog image, very sedate, and it's kind of a self-measuring kind of image where the dog is jumping as high as it can, and there are symbols of measurement all around. There's an interesting Art Deco stool on the bottom, and soft ground etching effects, and the whole is about 7.5 feet high by 48 inches. So it was a really beneficial thing to have such a large press at my disposal and to have help, and I felt it was a very successful period. I did 5 images there.